The doors to the chamber opened, and through them walked a small human with a head of thick white hair. Akbar had met the man once before, when Fleary Voru, then an imperial moth, had been a guest of Tarkin. Circumstances soon conspired to get Voru sentenced to Kessel, where he had remained until he had been freed and returned to Coruscant as part of the rebel operation to take the planet. Akbar read pure cunning in Voru's dark eyes.
"I thank you for seeing me, esteemed counselors. I thank you for my freedom. I find myself in a position to repay the debt I owe you."
Leia regarded him coolly. "You don't consider your part in the liberation of Coruscant to have canceled that debt?"
"If the truth be told, Princess Leia, I do not."
Voru bowed his head.
"The liberation of the planet would have been accomplished more smoothly and efficiently if not for the treacherous behavior of one of my lieutenants. While I did not know Zeca Thine was working for Imperial Intelligence, I must accept responsibility for his actions. In effect, the liberation proceeded without my help, so my debt to you remains."
Thalia looked at Voru.
"What is it you want?"
Voru smiled.
"My people and I wish to be treated as criminals no longer. We want a chance to gain legitimacy and lead normal lives. For this, we realize we need to offer you something of value. We know the ways of the black market. We know how to disrupt it and break it. What I want is for my people to be allowed to administer the law in the underworld here."
Akbar slowly nodded. Fleary Voru presented an interesting case. While he underplayed his contribution to the winning of Coruscant, he could easily have turned Rogue Squadron over to the Imperials, and his support, despite the betrayal of subordinates, made him a valuable ally. Voru's request also made sense from a purely pragmatic position. While Kraken's law enforcement organization was getting set up, it would never be as effective in the underworld as Voru would be. Mon Mothma pressed her hands against the tabletop.
"The fight against the Empire is truly what bound the Alliance together. We must build on that basic level of trust if we expect the Republic to thrive. As long as Fleary Voru's people are willing to abide by the conduct standards we set for our law enforcement and militia forces, they will remain within the bounds of our trust. If they step outside those guidelines, they will be dealt with in a suitable manner."
Voru bowed.
"You will find me a most able and loyal servant in this matter, Mon Mothma."
"So I trust, Fleary Voru."
"So we must all trust," Akbar murmured.
All the while, in the back of the grav cab, Wedge tried to puzzle out what Mirax had found on the pulsar skate that could threaten the Alliance. When he arrived at the darkened hangar, he quickly crossed to the skate and made his way up the loading ramp. At the top of the gangway, he nodded to Mirax's pilot, Liat Save. The Sulistan returned the nod without comment and raised the muzzle of his blaster carbine enough so Wedge could pass. The hatch of Mirax's Bato-class yacht, the pulsar skate, stood open, and through it, he could see Mirax sitting on a duroplast crate. A single red light provided the only illumination for the hold. Mirax looked up.
"Wedge, thanks for getting here so fast."
She gestured into the darkest part of the hold.
"Wedge Antilles, this is Claren Herf, a Vratix native of Typhara and a proud member of the Asheron Circle."
"The honor is ours, Commander Antilles."
Claren moved from the shadows and into the circle of light. The insectoid creature's head had two bulging compound eyes. Bent antennae dangled over a triangular face, and curved mandibles pressed against each other.
"I am pleased to meet you, Claren Herf."
Wedge smiled and extended a hand toward the Vratix. Claren's hand came in toward Wedge's, then moved past it as the Vratix brushed its fingers over Wedge's face. Mirax reached out and passed a hand over Claren's forenee. "The Vratix find both sound and vision to be deceptive senses. Only touch reports information truly."
"Interesting perspective."
Wedge shifted his hand around to grip the Vratix's arm above the spikes. "Claren, you are the Asheron agent who tipped us to the presence of the Bacta that Singe had captured?"
"We are responsible for that occurrence."
Claren tilted his head to the right and then the left.
"We would have preferred to transfer the Bacta directly to you, but that was not possible. Our affluence is not such that we could present our gift in the manner we wished."
Mirax scooted over on the crate. "Sit down, Wedge. This gets complicated." Claren spread his forelegs slightly to bring his face down to their level.
"You know of our world?"
Wedge said.
"Some.
Typhara is where Bacta is produced and distributed by Zoltan and Sucre, the two corporations that have a monopoly on the trade. The corporations are decidedly feudal in nature, with humans de facto governing a world where the Vratix are the majority. The Vratix's head bobbed on the end of his neck.
Good. What you must understand is that Vratix Varachin have always overseen the final processes of the Bacta. The Emperor suppressed small manufacturers in favor of Zoltan and Sucre. They realized greater profits by letting the market set the price and utilized imperial soldiers to wipe out independent growers and to round up all the Varachin wherever they had settled and return them to Typhara.
Wedge frowned. Twice now you've used the word Varachin.
We are Varachin.
Clarin tapped its free hand against its thorax.
We are similar to what you would call a hive mind.
Clarin are not masculine or feminine. We can both father young and bear them, depending on stages of our life cycle.
Varachin oversee the proper combination of organic components into the Bacta. Each lot has a minimum potency, but sometimes the Bacta is very potent and works extremely well. Such is the batch we have presented to you as our gift.
Gift? Wedge placed his hand atop Clarence's hand.
The Vratex are giving this Bacta to you because they want you, Wedge Antilles, to represent them before the Provisional Council. They want to join the New Republic.
What? Wedge's surprise gave way to a sense of impending disaster. Typhara was the sole supplier of Bacta, but the world had steadfastly remained neutral in the Civil War. Everyone believed that this was so they could gouge both the Empire and the Alliance and enrich themselves while the war raged. If the New Republic granted the Asheron any sort of status, the Typharan government would react harshly and swiftly. Clarin's mandibles clicked open and shut.
We have come here to Coruscant because we know you cannot jeopardize your people by taking up our cause. As Varachin, we have ways to mix up more than just Bacta, or to make Bacta more effective. We are here to learn of this Krytos virus and to stop it.
But this virus could kill you.
Great risk is necessary to defeat great evil. You know this.
Wedge smiled. That I do. I'm glad you're here, Clan Herf. If you can do anything more than you've already done to stop the Krytos virus, I'll gladly represent you before the Council. Tycho Selku's trial was being held. Staged was the term Defense Attorney Nora Venn preferred to use, in the old Imperial Justice Court. High vaulted ceilings had been covered with polished black marble panels, streaked with white, giving the whole room the feeling of being on a high promontory open to the night sky. The court was packed with people slavering for justice. Also present were Korinhorn's loyal R2 droid, Whistler, and the protocol droid that had been assigned to the squadron, Imtray. A previous owner had programmed Imtray to abandon his usual persona and duties to act the part of a black marketeer, a switch that had thoroughly baffled the squadron for a while. Commander Hala Etik rose from her place at the prosecution table. Athletically trim and tall, she cut a very authoritative figure with just a hint of menace as she turned her attention toward the tribunal, composed of Admiral Akbar, General Salm, and General Krix Madin. "If it pleases the court, we will call our first witness, Lieutenant Pash Kraken, to the stand," she said. Nawara hit a couple of keys on his datapad, calling up the deposition Pash had given him earlier. He let his eyes track over the script, but only to cover his surprise at Edek's choice of lead witness. He had fully expected her to start with Ayala Wasiri or General Kraken to establish a connection between Tycho and Imperial Intelligence. By calling Kraken's son Pash first, she appeared to want to prove that Tycho had the motive, means, and opportunity for killing Korin. Then she would work backward into the larger treason picture. Pash stepped into the witness box and was sworn in. Then Edek moved out from behind the prosecution table with the supple ease of a Tal'Pari stalking prey.
"Lieutenant Kraken, your service record had already been appended to the transcripts of this trial, so I will not ask for a recitation of your numerous citations and awards won in service to the Alliance. I would like you to think back to the events that led up to the night, 2 weeks ago, when Coruscant fell to our forces. There came a point during the operation here on Coruscant when the squadron's personnel were drawn together, correct?"
"Yes."
"And Captain Selku was not among those people, correct?"
"No. There had been an attack by Warlord Singe on the base at Nokasor,
Rogue Squadron staff was hit hard and Tycho Selku was missing. I thought he was dead.
There was another story told about Captain Selku, yes?
Yes.
Who told that story?
Lieutenant Horn.
What did Lieutenant Horn say about Captain Selku?
Nuora stood.
Objection. Hearsay.
Admiral Akbar leaned over and consulted with General Medin.
The objection is overruled.
Pash frowned. Corrin said he'd seen Tycho on Coruscant on the same day Warlord Zinj hit Nokosor.
And what did he say Captain Selku had been doing when he saw him?
He said he was talking to Kirtan Lur, but... Hala interrupted.
Now, Lieutenant, I want you to recall when it was that you saw Captain Selku after the report of his death.
3 weeks ago. He showed up and saved us from Stormies trying to kill us.
Now then, 2 weeks ago, you were preparing to fly a mission that would aid in our conquest of Coruscant.
Yes. Five of us were going to fly cover for the rest of the squadron as they tried to bring the planetary shields down.
To do that, you needed fighters, correct?
Yes. Captain Selku had purchased them during his time here on Coruscant.
That night, you witnessed a conversation between Captain Selku and Corrin Horn, did you not?
I did. I wasn't a party to the conversation, though.
But you did overhear Captain Selku tell Lieutenant Horn that he had checked over the fighter Horn would be using.
Yes.
And did you hear Lieutenant Horn threaten to work to expose Captain Selku's treason once he returned from the mission?
Yes. Fatigue dragged at the red-haired man's reply. The prosecutor smiled.
And what was Captain Selku's response to that threat?
He said he had nothing to fear from Corrin's investigation.
Corrin Horn felt as clumsy as the Trandoshan dragging him through the interrogation center's corridor. The injection an MD droid had given him back in his isolation cell had already begun to take hold. He believed that at least part of the concoction used was stertopanol, and that was not good. The one time he'd been under the influence of that drug, during an exercise at the Corellian Security Force Academy, he'd confessed to all sorts of minor transgressions from his childhood. That would have been merely comical, except that one of his father's cronies was overseeing the interrogation seminar and had supplied his father with a text of his confession. Corrin was brought before Isani Isard in a predominantly white room. She nodded to unseen minions behind a mirrored wall, then addressed Corrin.
What I have learned from your interrogation so far is a great deal of gossip that might be suitable for embarrassing the Corellian diktat, but that sort of information is hardly in short supply. You've not ensconced yourself highly enough in the councils of the rebellion to be of use to me. At least I do not believe you have. It is entirely possible you have managed to resist interrogation in certain areas.
Corrin shook his head. You got the wrong guy.
Then I will just have to make you into the right guy, won't I?
Her eyes narrowed with irritation.
Did General Kraken set you up in Rogue Squadron so you could watch Tycho Selku and uncover his ties to me?
No. I wasn't a spy for Kraken.
Were I inclined to believe anything, I might believe you in this case.
Isard stepped aside as the Trandoshan wheeled in a device that bristled with probes and an ever-changing light array.
Isard smiled.
This is a variant on a design Darth Vader created to torture, among others, Han Solo at Bespin. As you know, humans have a number of different types of neural receptors, and this device is designed to stimulate three of them. The original only worked on the pain receptors. I have found that adding stimulation for the heat and cold receptors is most effective in getting what I want out of those I interrogate.
Corrin wanted to snap off some quip, but fatigue and anxiety prevented him from mustering the required concentration.
So now we begin, Lieutenant Horn. Just tell me what I want to know.
Ayela with Siri almost felt sorry for Arisi Dalaret as Hala Edek tried to coax cooperation out of her.
Flight Officer Dalaret, how did you come to be on Coruscant 2 weeks ago?
Irisi's eyes flashed defiantly.
Corrin Horn and I were inserted into Coruscant in disguise. He was a Kuati Talban, and I was his mistress.
Hala Edek nodded.
So you were confidants.
We shared confidences, yes.
Flight Officer Dallard, did you speak with Lieutenant Horn before you took off on the night Coruscant fell?
Yes.
What was Lieutenant Horn's state of mind at that time?
He seemed anxious and agitated.
Anxiety, I could understand. We were all anxious about whether the mission would succeed.
And his agitation?
The witness hesitated.
I saw Corin speaking with Captain Selku, although I couldn't hear what they were saying. Then Corin came over and spoke with me.
And you concluded...
Something in their conversation had set Corin off.
Hala smiled at Nuora Venn.
Your witness.
The Twi'lek stood.
Flight Officer Dallaret, did you see Lieutenant Horn speak with anyone else that night?
No.
Nuora's head came up as if her answer surprised him.
You didn't see Lieutenant Horn speak with Mirax Terek?
Irisi shrugged her shoulders.
I suppose I did. I saw them standing near each other and then she ran off, but I don't recall any conversation.
So, as far as you know, Lieutenant Horn might have had multiple conversations that could have set him off.
I suppose so.
The Twi'lek bowed his head.
Thank you, Flight Officer Dallaret. That's all I have for you.
Every pain receptor in Corin Horn's body strobed on and off. Sometimes the pain would start at his feet and move up in a wave. Other times it would descend on him like a rain shower, or pummel him with randomly delivered jolts. He hung limp from the restraining straps. Isani Isard entered the interrogation chamber.
I would find you fascinating if you knew more, Horn. Your tolerance for pain is remarkable, but you present a problem for me. You don't know enough to be useful, and your minor position within the rebellion hardly makes you vital. If I return you to them, they will likely treat you much as they are treating Selku. On the other hand, you would be perfect to mold into my own Avenger. Your resistance to pain will make your rehabilitation into a right-thinking Imperial time-consuming, but not impossible.
Corin summoned strength from reserves he didn't know he had.
You won't live long enough to see me turn on my friends.
Anger directed at me. Excellent.
She politely applauded him.
Hate me all you want. I'll turn that hatred into hatred for those who haven't saved you from me. You won't be the first to be broken at me, and you'll not be the last.
Kirtan Lor ducked beneath moist, moldy pipes as he emerged from the rusty bowels of Imperial Center. He had been inspecting the airspeeders that his people had modified into flying bomb carriers that would be sent out on terrorist missions. Lor and his people were outnumbered, outgunned, and under-resourced, but they were winning. They had struck when and where they wished. Just the fact that they were able to assemble an armada of bombs on Imperial Center without detection was a triumph in their battle against General Kraken and his forces. Lor stepped outside the crumbling building as his airspeeder slid up to the curb and the rear gull's wing door swung up. He started into the passenger compartment, then caught himself. Inside, nestled in the corner, a small, white-haired man pointed a blaster pistol at him.
Sorry, wrong speeder, my mistake.
No mistake. Get in.
Lor had no choice but to enter the vehicle. Once he was sitting across from the man with the blaster, he recognized him.
Natty uniform, Voru.
I'm sure it will look impressive when you hold a news conference to announce my capture.
Indeed, it could.
Fleury Voru yawned in an exaggerated fashion.
The fact is, I had not been looking for you.
I was in the process of consolidating my hold on the Bacta Black Market, and had Nartlow under observation. Your people visited him last night.
We continued watching them and were led to the vehicle.
Nartlow indicated that he'd given you the locations of the Republic's Bacta repositories.
I immediately became suspicious.
He maintained you were just a Bacta dealer. But those containment centers just ached to be hit by the PCF.
That is what you are planning, yes?
Lor looked around the passenger compartment.
I would have thought General Kraken would resort to more professional methods of interrogation.
Voru plucked at the crease in his slacks.
He would, and will, if you do not choose to cooperate with me. If I don't get answers from you, I will tell Kraken I have uncovered a plot to assault the centers.
And you have an alternative plan?
Voru smiled. You will now be working for me. You will hit targets I give you, and you will hit them when I want them hit. I am not unsympathetic to your war against the rebellion. I simply want the black market to bankrupt the Republic, so someone who has monetary reserves can come in and bail things out. That being you. Of course. Isani Isad may have injected the Krytos virus into Imperial Center, but the rebels have injected a more deadly virus than that. Me. Lur pressed his lips together in a thin line. My refusal to go along will mean my death, he thought. But like Isani Isad, Sliri Voru will not live forever. What do you want? I want you to hit only one of the six repositories at this time. The one just south of the Senate District. My people have already managed to steal most of that supply anyway, so your attack will cover our tracks. I will give you other targets as we go along. Consider it done. Tonight, during Mon Mothma's speech? Voru's face blossomed in a broad smile. Ah, you have a taste for irony. Splendid. I think our alliance will be most profitable for both of us. Nawara Venn paused in his cross-examination of Aiello Wasiri and studied his datapad, as if to refresh his memory about a key point. Now, Agent Wasiri, you alluded to something in Lieutenant Horn's report about seeing Captain Selku in conversation with Kirtan Lur that left a question in your mind. What was that? Aiello spoke reluctantly. Corrin described Lur as wearing a hooded cloak. He recognized Lur from his height and his gait, but he never actually saw his face. And as observant as Corrin was, you think that his making an identification without seeing the individual's face leaves room for doubt? Yes. The Twi'lek nodded. Thank you for your candor. Nothing further. Aided by the Trandoshan's healthy shove, Corrin flew through a darkened doorway. He curled into a ball and rolled. He hit some things, most of which cried out and all of which gave way, then came to an abrupt stop against something solid. He opened his eyes and in the dim light made out the smiling, bearded face of a huge man. The man dragged Corrin to his feet.
Quite the entrance.
Corrin plucked at the canvas tunic that was his prison uniform and tried to settle it in place.
I had help making it.
The big man nodded.
The Trandoshan doesn't like anyone. I'm Urlor Seti.
He offered Corrin his hand. It was missing the last two fingers. Corrin met the man's firm grip.
Corrin Horn. Glad to make your acquaintance. Come on, I'll take you to the old man.
Urlor led Corrin deeper into the cell complex. It appeared to have been drilled out of solid rock. Thick dust coated the floor and hung in Urlor's wake like fog. Passing under a low entrance, they entered a side chamber. An older man, whose hair and beard were white, sat up and swung his legs over the edge of a hammock braided from old strips of tunic canvas. Corrin had the sense that he'd seen the man before, but it was long ago and he couldn't place him. Urlor spoke to the older man respectfully.
Sir, this is Corrin Horn. They just delivered him to us.
The man stood and peered closely.
Come here, son. Let me see you close up.
Corrin closed the gap between them and felt Urlor drop in behind him, ready to prevent him from doing any harm to the old man.
I'm with Rogue Squadron, a lieutenant.
The old man smiled.
You've got a good commander in Antilles, assuming Skywalker's not back in charge there.
No, sir, he isn't. Wedge Antilles is still in charge. The man extended his hand.
My name's Jan. If you're in here, it's because Isard has sucked you dry, like the spider she is. Some of us have been here since Yavin. It's been about a year and a half since we've had word about how the war is going.
Corrin's smile grew broad as pride swelled inside him.
Rogue Squadron went into Coruscant and managed to bring the shields down. I don't remember much, but I know our fleet arrived and I was evacuated by Isard as she fled the planet. So I have to figure Coruscant is now ours. It is yours because we gave it to you.
An obese man squeezed through the doorway. His tunic, which was black like his thinning hair, could barely contain his bulk.
You inherited a dying world.
Jan nodded in the man's direction.
This is General Ivir Derakot, late of Imperial service. He is the ranking Imperial here among us.
Corrin introduced himself, adding,
I was at Borlaeus.
Then you saw me smash the little invasion fleet you sent against me.
Yeah, I did, and I lost friends in that battle.
Corrin balled a fist and arced it at Derricote's head, but it never landed. Erlor lunged forward, grabbed the collar of Corrin's tunic, and hauled him backwards.
Hey, that hurts!
Erlor kept his voice even.
There's a rule. If we beat up on the imps, the staff here beats up on the old man.
Corrin turned to Jan and bowed his head.
I won't let it happen again.
Jan coughed lightly into his hand.
Spirit is good, Corrin. Very good. The general here was the one who told us of Rogue Squadron's defeat at Borlaeus. He left out your apparent return and victory.
Derricote sniffed.
Had I still been on Borlaeus, there would have been more rebel bloodshed.
He turned to Jan.
Before I forget, a batch is ready. Thank you. I'll have Erlor organize a party to help you decant it.
As Derricote left, Jan smiled.
The general is a recent addition to our population, but he has proved himself useful in that he's good with biotics. He's managed to ferment a relatively mild ale here, providing us with a forbidden pleasure.
Corrin frowned.
You trust him enough to drink it?
Jan shrugged.
He drinks enough of it himself that if it were lethal, he'd have long since been dead.
Corrin looked around.
What do they have us do here?
The old man sighed.
Hard labor make work. Big rocks are made into little rocks are made into gravel, and gravel is moved from one point to another. It is painfully and mind-numbingly boring, designed to crush hope and make the days meld one into another. It drives some men insane.
Corrin lowered his voice.
Anyone ever escape? Not quite that insane, son.
So escape is impossible?
Jan winked at him as he dropped his voice into a conspiratorial whisper.
I never said impossible. I just said it hadn't been done successfully.
Corrin laughed quietly.
I'm with Rogue Squadron. Impossible is our stock in trade, and success is what we deliver.
As Prosecutor Halla Etik walked toward him, Wedge felt more trapped in the witness box than he ever had in action against the Empire. Commander Antilles, how did you come to be on Coruscant? Wedge sat up straighter. My squadron and I were here to evaluate the world to determine if, how, and when the Alliance might attempt to take it.
I see.
What was the security classification on this operation?
The highest. If it had been known that we were here, we would have been dead.
Halla nodded. In preparation for sending your squadron out, what role did Captain Selku play?
He played no part.
Why not?
Objection.
Nuora Venn stood at the defense table.
Calls for a conclusion.
Halla frowned. It goes to the witness's state of mind, Admiral. Admiral Akbar shook his head.
Counselor Venn, please do not object to questions that call for answers that Captain Selku's commanding officer should know. Overruled. You may answer the question, Commander.
Wedge nodded. Captain Selku was seen as a security risk by General Kraken, so he was not involved in the preparation for the mission.
Then how did Captain Selku end up on Coruscant?
Wedge sighed.
This is not going to look good, he thought.
If any of our people got picked up on the mission, it would be logical for the imps to conclude there were more of us present. I wanted someone there whom I could trust to get me out of difficult situations.
So you chose someone that Allied Intelligence did not trust?
I chose Tycho because he had been to Coruscant before and knew his way around.
Did you feel you had reasons to fear your operation might be compromised to Imperial Intelligence?
There is a risk of betrayal with any covert operation. And there were other incidents involving Rogue Squadron where there had been betrayal, correct?
I'm not certain what you mean by that.
Please characterize for the court the first mission to Borlaeus.
It was an unmitigated disaster. I lost people, the Alliance lost people, and we didn't take the planet.
Halla glanced down at her datapad.
There was an investigation conducted upon your return to determine if your mission had been betrayed to the enemy, was there not?
Yes, but Tycho was never under suspicion.
Still, there existed the specter of a chance that whoever might have betrayed your mission to Borlaeus could betray your mission to Coruscant, did it not?
Yes.
Halla's eyes narrowed.
Commander Antilles, tell me truthfully.
When Kornhorn told you he'd seen Captain Selku speaking to an Imperial intelligence operative, didn't you wonder, just for a heartbeat, if everything General Kraken had said about Tycho Selku wasn't true? Wedge refrained from looking over at Tycho.
Yes, for a heartbeat, I did allow myself to consider what Lieutenant Horn said. I rejected it just that quickly.
On what grounds?
I knew Tycho wasn't a spy.
You trusted Zeka Thine until proved wrong about him, didn't you, Commander?
No, that's not the way it was. Perhaps not to you, Commander, but it was to one man.
Hala Etik paused meaningfully.
Corrin Horn.
And now, he's dead. Outside the courtroom, Wedge slumped against the cold stone wall. Nawara tried to rehabilitate me as a witness, but the damage was done, he thought. I wanted to help Tycho, but I only made things worse. He hammered a fist against the wall.
Blast, he muttered.
A woman approached. She held up a comlink and nodded to a holocam carrying Ithorian.
This is Zari Lovanchi, Kawadi First Holo News, and I'm standing here with Alliance hero Commander Wedge Antilles. How does it feel, Commander, to know that your testimony may help convict Captain Selku?
Before Wedge could gather his wits enough to answer, someone sliced between him and the holo journalist, and he heard Derek Wasiri reply firmly.
Commander Antilles' only interest in this matter is in seeing justice done. Until then, any speculation on the outcome would be premature and possibly prejudicial. He has no further comment.
Wedge let Derek guide him through a security checkpoint to a bench, and they sat down. The older man smiled at him.
How are you holding up?
Wedge sighed. I think I'll recover. Thank you for saving me. Derek smiled.
Ayala was afraid something like that would happen. She sent me after you. Don't worry. All Commander Etik did was establish that Tycho was on Coruscant at your request, and that the possibility of betrayal was on your mind.
Sure. But she also made it sound like I wouldn't know who was a spy and who wasn't. Derek opened his hands.
Why would you? Ferreting spies is not what you do. And between you and me, I don't think Captain Selku is a spy either. I've had a number of conversations with him recently. If he's a spy, well, then all of us are suspects.
Kirtan Lor peered down at Fleary Voru, but his stare did not have the intimidating effect on the small man that he had hoped for.
Colonel Voru, I do not like this turn of events. I invited you here to inform you of my plan as a courtesy, not to allow you to veto it.
Voru shrugged.
Ah, but I have vetoed it.
Lor began stalking around his office.
No, I cannot allow this. The destruction of Rogue Squadron has been a priority with me since well before they took Imperial Center. Now they are within my grasp. I have a squadron of X-Wings here that I will use to attack their base and destroy them on the ground.
Voru leaned back in Lure's chair and put his booted feet on the desk, scattering a stack of data cards.
Your priorities do not matter to me. I deem this attack too risky. Kraken will suspect I leaked information to you.
No, I have found you a new target.
What is it?
A school. Lure frowned.
School? You mean a training academy?
No, a school. For children.
Children of the rebel leadership?
Hardly. They've been too busy to breed. This is just a normal school with normal children. Some aliens, but mostly humans.
Why?
Come now, Agent Lore. You didn't expect to get results without inflicting pain, did you? Threaten a child and you will unite the parents against you.
Kill a child, and those who have lost it will retreat in mourning. They will keep their other children out of schools. This will shatter the Republic's ability to indoctrinate the young.
It also makes the rebellion look weak.
It struck Lur as almost comical that he saw Voru's plan as evil. Yet his own desire to hit Rogue Squadron was nothing more than duty.
We are not as far apart as I would like to think, Lur mused. But neither are we as close as Voru sees us. Nor am I as stupid as he thinks.
Kornhorn shuffled along in line with the other prisoners. He affected the dull-eyed, hopeless stare most of them displayed, moving when told to move and stopping when told to stop. None of the guards conducting them to the mine should have noticed anything out of the ordinary about him. 70 paces from the cave mouth,
They passed the opening to the latrine. 30 paces beyond that, about halfway to the mine complex, they passed through a barred gateway. Corrin thought its presence unnecessary, since the imps had placed infrared detection units at both ends of the corridors. A full 203 paces from the mouth of the cavern complex, they entered what had once been a ship's hatchway and crossed into the prisoner's workstation. Rumor among the prisoners had it that Lusankia dated from before the Clone Wars, and that parts of various ships that had been blasted to pieces had been used to construct this place. Inside the hatch, they proceeded down a relatively steep grade to a long rectangular cavern that had 5 tunnels shooting off it like fingers from a hand. All the tunnels ended in chained and padlocked doors, cobbled together from ship bulkhead panels. At the far end of the chamber sat several piles of huge boulders. Men worked on them with sledgehammers, breaking them down into smaller rocks. The resulting gravel was then carried in buckets to a conveyor belt that took the gravel up and away. The top of the conveyor belt disappeared through a heavy steel grate. Most of the prisoners assumed the gravel went to a blast furnace or mixing container. Corrin argued that it was just as likely that it was being dumped into hover trucks and taken out to pave walkways in some moss garden. And if that were true, the grate was all that stood between them and freedom. Corrin hacked obediently at the rock for a while. Then he took a quick inventory of the guards. There was 1 stormtrooper in armor for every 10 prisoners in the work details. 6 carried blasters. 2 more crewed an E-web set up just inside the hatchway, making any attempt to rush out of the mine suicidal. Erlor tossed a shovelful of gravel toward Corrin's bucket, saying in a low voice, "Don't do this, Corrin. Wait. Learn more." "This is learning." Corrin winked at the big man. "Guards have their blasters selected for stun." Bucket in hand, he started in an awkward, hunched-over Ribet walk toward the conveyor belt. His plan was simple. He'd dump his bucket, then hop over the railing and ride the belt up to the grate. If he could get through the grate, he'd be free.
"You there!"
Corrin looked over at the guard pointing at him.
"Me? Come here!"
Corrin shuffled over to the man.
"Sir?" "Don't question me, prisoner."
Without warning, the guard brought his blaster carbine up and around in a backhand stroke that caught Corrin over the ear. Stars exploded before his eyes and his ears rang. Pain overrode panic. As he whirled, he held on tight to the bucket, brought it up, and let it fly when his tormentor came into view again. The gravel-filled container smashed into the guard's faceplate. Corrin heard the whine of a blaster. The stun bolt caught him square in the middle of his chest. In one instant, every nerve in his body fired, racking him with pain. His limp body's impact on the ground probably hurt, but his nervous system couldn't route reports to his brain properly, so he didn't know how he felt. He saw Jan crouching over him.
"I'll see they get you help."
The guards called for a medical team, which arrived quickly with a repulsor lift stretcher. The medtechs wrestled the stretcher into a lift, and Corrin heard 3 tones, which he took to mean they had ascended 3 floors. They floated him through corridors that appeared much more modern and well-maintained than anything else he had seen on Lusankia. Finally, they brought the stretcher to a stop in a place where he caught the familiar scent of Bacta, and where he was unceremoniously dumped to the floor. Corrin wasn't certain he could trust any of his senses, especially because what he was hearing now was simply impossible. Starting from above his head and continuing on down toward his feet, he heard the Doppler sound of stormtroopers marching. That was not remarkable in and of itself, except that if they had been where they seemed to be, they were in a room below him, marching on the ceiling. What that meant was truly beyond his ability to comprehend. Although Aiello Asiri was working with the prosecution, her primary concern had always been to find out the truth about Tycho. Now, she was using all her resources to track down the Duro, Lynutka, whom Tycho claimed he'd been meeting with when Corrin thought he was with Kirtan Lur. She discovered that, as Tycho had said, Nutka had moved shipments for the Alliance, but he didn't appear to have firm ties with their cause. Aiello started pumping through the Imperial computer, checking out the various aliases Nutka had used. The computer reported a lot of misses, but finally she got a hit. Just 3 days before Tycho supposedly met with Nutka, a modified Corellaspace Jim Snore III freighter named Novachild had entered the Coruscant system. A Duro named Hesk Lilto was listed as the captain of record. No departure for that captain or that ship had been recorded.
The one record providing information about the flight had been in a duty log filed after Coruscant had fallen, and after Tycho Selku had been taken into custody. Ayala could not prove that Lynutka and Hesk Lilto were the same person, but the fact that she could find no mention either of the Novachild or of Hesk Lilto told Ayala the records had been deliberately purged. It was beginning to look more and more like Tycho was being framed. Corin scratched at his right ear, flaking off crusted blood.
Yeah, I know it sounds as if I got hit harder than I did, but I'm convinced I'm right.
He looked at Jan.
I think it's a good shot at getting out of here.
Jan nodded.
I agree.
Erlor shook his head.
Too far-fetched.
Corin insisted.
Which is why I want to test my theory.
He had gone over in his mind what had happened when he'd been taken to the infirmary, and had come to two conclusions. The first, which no one doubted, was that the stormtrooper in the mine had singled him out because someone had mentioned his desire to escape. Though Corin hadn't spoken of his plan to anyone other than Jan and Orlor, the questions he'd asked the inmates would have been enough to alert even the densest individuals to his intentions. His second conclusion, which he had spent the last week attempting to convince Jan and Erlor was true, was that they were all upside down. Reversing the gravity in the complex would lead any potential escapee to assume that by going up, he'd be getting closer to the surface and freedom, when, in fact, he'd be going farther down and farther away from escape. He shook his head.
No, I'll still go, even if my experiment is unsuccessful. And if I'm right, you can come with me.
Erlor held up his ruined hand.
I've learned to become patient. I'll wait for you to come back.
Corin looked at Jan.
How about you?
Jan shrugged.
If I escape, Izhart will kill the lot of us. I'll remain here and keep our people safe until you can bring back help.
Corin frowned.
So neither of you will go?
No, you'll be on your own.
Corin knew that what Erlor left unsaid was the conviction that the imps might have spies among the Alliance prisoners. And my traveling alone means that if I'm a spy, I won't be taking anyone else with me, he thought.
Don't worry, I'm no Tycho Selku. Nor will I let myself be betrayed by one again.
Jan's eyes narrowed.
Tycho Selku? He was here for several months. They called him out one day and he vanished. Was he a traitor?
He's the reason I'm here. He gave the imps override data on a headhunter I was flying and they took control.
Erlor scratched at his jaw.
Selku was a sleeper, wasn't he?
As much as Corin hated Tycho, that description sent a chill down his spine. Amid the prison population were individuals who were suffering severe shock from their interrogations. Most were ambulatory, but not much beyond that. In the brief time he'd been here, he'd seen one or two of them recover to a certain extent, but their attention spans and short-term memory were shot. They did seem to get better, but only gradually. Jan nodded.
I believed he was, but that must have been an act. If people thought he was a sleeper, they would speak in front of him.
Corin said. He had a lot of people fooled, Wedge Antilles included.